You're listening to The Deceptionist, Truth Through Fiction. On this episode, Dave, Caroline, Kelly, and Jim continue the exploration of world building. We all get started with our assignments, and we share the successes and the hurdles that we're facing. We also lose Jim for part of the call, but rest assured, listeners, he's okay. There's also a whole thing about Big Bird, but you're just going to have to listen.
In 1649, to St. George's Hill, a ragged band they called the Diggers came to show the people's will. They defied the landlords, they defied the laws. They were the dispossessed, reclaiming what was theirs. We come in peace, they said, to dig and sow. We come to work the lands in common and to make the waste grounds grow. This earth divided, we will make whole. So it will be a common treasury for all.
You're listening to The Deceptionist, Truth Through Fiction, a monthly podcast all about the craft of storytelling. We're by storytellers, for storytellers, and looking to bring a sense of community to the solitary pursuit of writing. My name is Kelly Stevenson, and today I'm joined by Dave Acampo.
Hi.
Caroline Pruitt.
Hello.
And Jim Rachowski.
Hello.
This week we're continuing our serious discussion on world building by taking a look at the first steps to building new worlds. If you were listening to our last podcast, at the very end of our last podcast, we were all assigned topics, specific sort of world building themes that we pulled out of a hat or actually at random.org. So tonight we're going to kind of discuss what we learned, what we discovered about ourselves and about our process and how much fun we're having with these new worlds. And then we'll talk about what's in store next for us and for our audience. So who wants to start?
I think Caroline should start.
Oh, because this will be short. I don't know. Do we want to start with somebody who actually figured out how to do this?
I'm just curious of what, you know, we heard from Caroline over the past couple weeks as she's been struggling with this. So I'm kind of curious about where you started when we ended the call last time and then what happened to you over the course of the couple weeks of trying different things or not trying.
It's not that I wasn't trying. It's just that I really, and I do think that what, you know, what I got was a little bit more of a challenge in terms of just purely doing the world building independently, because it's mostly our world and then it's just something built onto it. So, you know, you don't want to do something that exotic or, you know, you're not doing something that exotic, but you want it to kind of not just be any old thing. So, And I will say that I had about a paragraph of notes that I lost. So that's about as far as I got. So I pulled up. So I was just kind of, and I think this was where we were in the round of emails a couple weeks ago. I was struggling with really how to figure out how to start. Cause I'm like, well, you know, I could do vampires, but if you say vampires, if you do it differently, then everybody says you're doing vampires wrong. And if you do exactly the same thing that everybody else has always done with vampires, there's no actual world building to accomplish. So it was, but I was kind of running into that kind of thing a lot. I'm like, well, you know, yeah, there's vampire. I would just basically made a list. And I have, like, actually, what I have in front of me is, like, 4 pages of lists of, like, I was like, well, there's witches, there's vampires, there's superpowers, there's werewolves, fairies, robots, telepaths. And I'm like, well, do I want it to be something that's secret and only a few people know? Do I want it to be something that's out in the known world?
So this is a lot of the stuff that we talked about last time. I mean, last time we talked about, you know, if you're going to do a
world that's akin to an urban fantasy or something like that. So it's our world, but it has an element to it. Like vampires, we talked about, you know, we talked a lot about what does that mean? Like if they haven't come out, if they have, I mean, Kelly had a specific, you know, idea along those lines. And so sounds like you were really sort of churning over. That's an interesting dilemma. It's that, okay, if I do vampires, everyone's done vampires. So what do I bring to the table that's different? Did you find that sort of just really frustrating? Like,
yeah, and
it was shackling you in a way.
Well, again, it was just kind of sort of, you know, well, what do you pick and how do you decide what to pick? And I have, and like, so I'm like, traditional superpowers exist, but they are controlled by corporate interests. You could buy and sell them. And that's kind of thing was like, was I was sort of brainstorming. And then I sort of went to like, what are some characters that I want to write about? I have something about boarding school in question mark. So, and then I think I actually said this on Twitter. I put, I said I made a list of like, what are things like in, you know, things I've already written that I write about. And I said, well, I've written rock bands, military hierarchies, teenage lesbians, they solve crime. And then I said, well, that
so
got
I
me
to make one of them a fairy and you're good, right?
Yeah, I mean, probably, right? And but so what I kind of got to was, well, I wanted to set something at a boarding school for girls, but it's kind of like, rather than like a fancy school, it's kind of like a military style reform school for girls. So that's about as far as I got, as far as, well, that might be a structure for world building. And this is where I could put some character dynamics on it. But then I was kind of like, I don't know what that actually has to do with anything supernatural. And so again, I made some lists of things that might be relevant, but I really didn't get anywhere. And it was like, literally, I was on chat last night with Jen. And I'm like, okay, so I don't know what to do with this. And she literally, like in 5 minutes, she's like, oh, it could be this. It could be this. It could be this. And I'm like, okay, that's like five like really good ideas that you just said.
I'm trying really hard not to do the same thing on the call.
No, that's fine. And that's but I'm just, I'm like, well, yeah, but if somebody else just tells me what it is, then it's not really my thing. So that is really, and so I was just kind of like, I got to the point of questions. Like I got to the point of like, here are some interesting questions that I can answer. But then I'm like, well, how do I decide which of those to go with? You know, I was kind of waiting for something to click.
Right.
That I felt like I could get into a story. So I literally never got past that point. So that is where I am.
Sometimes you do have to wait for things to click, too. Uh-huh. I mean, you know, I liken it to when I'm searching for a story, I feel like, and I know we've talked about this on the show before, like everything you see and do, it's sort of like you're just filtering through these puzzle pieces and going, does this click? Does this click? And then eventually something may or may not. I'm curious, what drew you to the boarding school idea? Like, what about that concept appeals to you in writing? Because you seem to have landed on that, and you're not sure what the flair part of it is yet, but what drew you to the boarding school?
Well, there's a couple things, and one of the things I noted is that just, you know, when I was, like, picking something to settle on, I said, well, I wanted the relationship between two girls to be the central relationship. And they don't have to be teenage lesbians. I had not settled on that. But I was just kind of like, well, instead of it being, you know, instead of it being about a girl and a boy, or instead of it being some other kind of dynamic, I wanted to sort of have that kind of friendship be the focus. And I had just sort of the general idea, well, one of the girls is more worldly and experienced, and the other one is more, well, one of the girls is more streetwise and one of them is more sheltered. And then I had that noted down as bring it on dynamic. Because I was like sort of going through, well, what are different movies that do this stuff? So, and then also the idea of, I'm like, okay, if I set something at a school, that gives you a lot of latitude to world build within that setting.
Right.
And it kind of gets you off, like, I'm like, well, I couldn't really write something set at like an actual like service academy, mm-hmm. because that would be a lot of research that I would have. Whereas I'm like, if I'm doing, okay, I want to invent this school and it's not a school that actually exists, I can make up whatever I want about it. And then if I get stuck, I don't know how this would work. It's close enough to think, like, you know, obviously Hogwarts, a lot of that is based on just how certain level of English public schools are run.
Right.
So, you know,
I think there's a fictional benefit to like a boarding school in that it sets you away from parents, or it sets you, it kind of creates that fishbowl a little bit. And I think that's good for fiction. That's why I was asking that too, because it seems like I get the idea of creating it and not wanting to use a real thing because then you have to do a lot of research, but you could also just set it at like a local high school that kind of like one you went to, so you could do it and know about it. But you chose a boarding school, and it seems to me there's something there, like there's an element there. Boarding school, I think of isolation, and I think of, you know, being away from your family and sort of being forced to form, you know, bonds with someone else. And then I also like your note about your relationship between these two girls. You know, whether it's intimate or just friendship, it seems to be you're looking at a contrast between the two. You know, the sheltered girl and the worldly girl. And, you know, not to do what everyone else is doing, but, you know, immediately I say, oh, the worldly girl, what if she's an otherworldly girl? Or, you know, something.
Right. Yeah.
You know, like there's avenues where you can go and flare it.
Oh, no, go ahead.
Sorry, I was just checking to make sure I wasn't on mute again. I was thinking the opposite. I was thinking, well, the sheltered girl is sheltered because she's an alien and she's just been dropped down on this planet and has no clue what's going on.
Ooh, I like that.
See,
too,
I didn't even think of aliens. Yeah, so yeah, that's definitely something. Yeah, so maybe she's like a Skrull. Like, what if we have like an actual Skrull who's dropped off in a book? Well, and that was the other thing as far as making a decision about that. I hadn't decided. It seems like, well, the supernatural thing could be a secret thing about the school. Like one of the things that Jen immediately came up with, she goes, oh, well, they're training them to fight. And they're training them to like be the best that they can be in this sort of military school perfection, because when they graduate, they get turned into vampires and then they're at the peak. And I'm like, oh, that's actually really.
What if they're training to fight an alien invasion, and then the one girl is an alien and she's like a sleeper agent, but then she ends up liking the other girl. And so there's this sort of like it either could be a Romeo and Juliet story or just a friendship story where it's like, you know, they're at odds with each other, you know.
Challenging your ideas of what family is, because is it the family that she's made, or is it the family that she was there to protect?
Ooh, okay, yes. So basically, like, is the school the sort of supernatural thing? Like, and the sort of parallel, if the comic book Morning Glories is kind of like these kids who seem to be normal get pulled into the school that is doing these creepy things.
Oh, yeah.
Or is it like that, like we're talking about, like with the alien invasion, like, well, what if the supernatural element is just something that's the kid who happens to land there, and the school itself is just a you know, quote, normal school, but it still has all these things you can do with the school as a setting. Or or then the other alternative is, if there's some kind of just difference in the whole world, like it's, if it's a world where, like, you know, everybody with green eyes can do magic or something, and somehow, so this is a school for the kids who have trouble controlling their magic, so they're being disciplined there. So it's like basically the supernatural thing is something that applies to the whole world, and the school is just a microcosm. So
it almost sounds like you have too many ideas and you're having trouble figuring out what to commit to.
I wouldn't say I have too many ideas, but there's too many. It's like you're standing at a fork in the road and there's too many different directions. And I'm like, well,
one. Right.
Right. And I don't know the process of sort of, you know, getting from that point of this is where all the possibility is to actually kind of, and you know, picking one to develop.
I feel like that's something we may have touched on before, is that, like, that's something about that act of writing, because when you start with a blank page, you have that infinite canvas, right? You can go anywhere you want. But as you start making choices with your characters, you're sort of narrowing down your choices until ultimately the ending should be inevitable. You know, it should be like, it could only end this way because of the paths I took along the way. It's, you know, it's all narrowing down. But that's scary when we're writing, because we keep thinking the grass is greener, you know? We keep thinking, well, what if I had done that? What if I, oh, mm-hmm. what if it was aliens? Maybe I made the wrong choice. And, you know, there's a point where I think you just have to sort of make that decision. And it sounds right. like you're in that part, you're sort of hovering there going like, uh-huh. you know, but there's fun stuff I could do with vampires, but there's fun stuff I could do with aliens. And you're not sure which to do.
Yeah, I would about assess it that way. So but I did, I'm glad you made me talk through that because I did have more ideas than I thought I did.
Yeah, sounds like it.
So basically before next month, I will have picked one of these and done something with it.
So it sounds like though that where you're really focusing on your world is your characters like that. Mm-hmm. You kind of, you know, you've loosely put a setting for them to interact in. But mm-hmm. what is drawing you to this story is definitely the two girls. So yeah, I would start with that, and you know, you can figure out some other stuff. I mean, unless you need to start with chapter one. You know, I'm an alien and I'm coming to this boarding school. Like they could just start, and you know, things would come up, whether it's something specific about the school or specific about the girls that blossoms. I suspect it would just start blossoming as long as you want it to, like as long as you don't have to stop every, you know, five paragraphs and go, I should really think about putting something supernatural in here. Mm-hmm. Just sort of accept the fact that there's something supernatural going on, something flair wise. I shouldn't say supernatural because that's not techie or aliens, but mm-hmm. You know, just accept that there's some sort of flair and work with that. And I think you've got a really great start, honestly. That sounds like an interesting thing to read, whatever it ends up being.
We shall see.
So, who's next? Jim, you've been quiet over there. Because you're maybe not online? Is Jim not here?
What? So going from...
I'm right here.
Okay, everybody just went robot on me.
Yeah, bastards. Okay.
Are we good now, Kelly?
No, you're all kind of... As long as you're not robot to you, it's fine. I'll just figure out why everyone's gone robot.
Everybody else sounds okay to me.
Am I robot?
I am guilty.
Not anymore.
You're not helping. Okay.
Please blow me up.
So we all do robot voice for the rest of the...
So, Jim, you had an alternate history. I'm
what
curious
are you
how that went.
About? Well, in my opinion, it's fine. But your mileage may vary. Basically, my world works out like this. In 1986, it was decided that NASA was, according to the Reagan administration, going to figure out a way to make space travel more interesting to normal human beings with normal civilian jobs. In reality, they chose a woman by the name of Christy to get aboard the Space Shuttle Challenger, and the Space Shuttle Challenger launched and had fairly predictable, depressing, horrific results. But that is not the way they intentioned things originally. Originally, they wanted the passenger on the Space Shuttle Challenger to be a regular guy who would excite the children of the 20th century, and his name was Carol Spinney, otherwise known as Big Bird. Originally, Krista McAuliffe was not supposed to be on the Space Shuttle Challenger. Originally, the person who was supposed to be on the Challenger was Carol Spinney as Big Bird in costume, who would have taken off on the launch pad with the Space Shuttle Challenger. And then in January of 1986, have met his end aboard that craft, which in other words meant that as someone writing writing this story, the question was, what would have happened if Big Bird had been aboard the Space Shuttle Challenger, and then that craft would have blown up on the launch pad, and Big Bird would have died?
I would not have predicted that in a million years. And no. I love it.
No, I can't believe I'm laughing about this.
No, indeed. And
are you envisioning a generation of children being traumatized by
the death of Big Bird?
Yeah. Yes, I absolutely am. What would have happened if Big Bird would have friggin' died in the Space Shuttle Challenger explosion in 1986? How's that now, for how a much of that is true? Floor? What?
How much of that is true? So that, like, legitimately,
all of
they
that
were
is
put
true.
Big Bird on the space shuttle.
During the Reagan administration, they decided they were gonna put a regular person aboard the Challenger so that people would have had a better idea of what it was like if a regular person had been on the space shuttle, so that people would have had a basically it was intended to rekindle people's love of space exploration. And
yeah, well,
especially
because my aunt was in running to be the teacher on the space shuttle, actually.
Well, how's that for a quinky dink? Yeah, they wanted to rekindle young people's interest in the space program, and their way of doing that was having Carol Spinney as Big Bird be on the Space Shuttle Challenger. They decided not to do it when it turned out that Big Bird was too big to fit into the capsule.
Oh my god.
There you go.
I didn't know any of that, actually. That's interesting.
All of this is literally true. At one point, they decided to have Radar, Big Bird's teddy bear, be the one on the launch. But they decided that wouldn't resonate enough with the average Joe. So they ended up going with Krista McAuliffe, who boarded the Challenger, and then, like the professional astronauts, met her fate on that crash. It is very difficult to believe that what I'm saying is true, but it absolutely is. And my fiction considered what that world would be like. Spoiler alert, awful.
Roses.
I picture there'd be a lot of folk words. Songs about the day the bird died or something, you know?
There would be a lot of folk songs at first, but after that, there would be a definite hardening in the Reagan administration about the Soviets and the space program and just about everything else. My worldview would be that if Big Bird were murdered in outer space, everything would be awful 20 years from then. Like,
wow.
Like, imagine that you were a producer on Sesame Street and Big Bird blew up in the sky.
Because that would be live. Like, that would have been every...
Absolutely.
Like, as much as we were all watching in our classrooms anyway, that would have been everywhere.
Yeah,
amen.
I remember watching that in our classroom. Oh, my God.
Can you imagine watching that? And, yeah. Yeah. That's messed
imagine
up.
What... Imagine what Sesame Street would look like right now.
So how long did it take you to land on this idea, Jim? Like, I'm just from the time we ended the show last time, I'm curious, like, when did you settle on that idea?
It had been about a week, and then I heard about this rumor that if it weren't for the fact that Big Bird's neck was as long as it was, we would be living in a world where Big Bird had been murdered in the sky.
Wow.
And I thought, oh, well, what a hellish nightmare that would be. Where we would all be, like, everyone younger than 25 would be a cynical monster. And PBS would have
no funding.
Completely sacrificed itself to become this Reagan-Bush nightmare, and everything that would come according to that.
Uh-oh, I lost Jim.
Hello?
Hello? I think we lost Jim. I still see him there.
Is he muted?
I don't know. There he is.
Oh, thank God.
The Russians are trying to silence Jim for exposing the Big Bird.
Anyway, okay. It would suck. The end.
So now, from there, how did you start? So that's the divergent point. That's the big what if. And I love that. That's fantastic. Did you then go, what would 2012 be like? And then start working from there? Are you thinking about characters and who would be your protagonist? Or where are you in your journey from there now?
Mostly, I'm thinking about what would 1987 be like.
Okay, okay.
And then going from there, where, Reagan being the master communicator that he was, what would happen if you were the president and Big Bird died on your watch? What would you do? And who are your enemies? And do you blame them? And in my estimation of things, the Cold War goes on an additional 10 or 15 years because the powers that be are blamed for something that is not their responsibility at all, and they react accordingly, and, Krista McAuliffe.
Okay, I have kind of an important question. Because I looked up Big Bird and the Space Shuttle Challenger in a blog post. It mentions that that was also the same flight that they considered putting John Denver on. Or that John Denver perhaps wanted to be. So I want to know, in your universe, I remember this mostly because it was a recurring gag in Bloom County, but in your universe, was John Denver also on the Space Shuttle with Big Bird?
No. In my universe, John Denver is one of the biggest protesters of all that results from Big Bird dying in outer space.
So John Denver becomes like a major public figure.
Yes.
Because apparently he did write a song about the Challenger anyway. So if you could imagine that song including Sesame Street references.
Oh, definitely. He becomes like a Ralph Nader figure in my universe, where he fights
the man. We get
President
Denver at this point, don't we?
Can you even imagine what happened if Ronald Reagan killed Big Bird? This is all I'm asking, really, in my version of events. What would take place? Vis-a-vis Perestroika, vis-a-vis Iran-Contra, if Big Bird had died on a launch pad.
This sounds like an opportunity for a sort of social satire period piece. Mm-hmm. Of the 80s. This is like literary fiction you're committing here, Jim.
Yes.
This is like David Foster Wallace territory.
Yes. No, you're absolutely right. I am a genius. that's right.
Okay.
It's just one of those things that you hear about and you're like, how did I never hear about this before? I'm almost 40 years old. And you change everything accordingly. But yes, all I'm saying is true. And I don't know what the result would be, but God damn, is it more interesting than anything I've read
right.
in the last 15 years. So that's my story. What do you guys got going on?
Well, I want to ask though one more thing. I'm curious. Okay, so given that world that you're building now, have you figured out what your story is actually going to be, or has it gotten that far? I mean, I get that that's the background, but what do you like? Have you settled on any kind of? Here's my narrator. His name is blah blah blah, and he's going to be living in either 1987 or in 2010 or whatever it is. And
but there's
this is
obviously
what his life
parallel
is like.
Timelines, and there's right. like a cast of 50 characters in this book, each right. of who has a point of view chapter.
Right. I'm just wondering,
so basically Game of Thrones.
But I'm like imagining all these different writers, if they were to tackle this book, like Stephen King's version of this book would be one, that's kind of.
This could be in a whole anthology. That's great. Jim, you should get on that. Right. Jim, start inviting writers.
Anthology. Solicit stories on what the world would be like without Big Bird.
That's what my documents have entailed, mainly, in this time.
You have contacts. You have sci-fi comic book writers. Come on, I bet a lot. This is what you need to ask if you get tasked to interview people.
Oh, that would be nice. What do you think about my idea? Please grant me $1,000.
Jim's whole podcast. It'll just be called the Dead right. Bird Podcast.
Oh my and God.
He would like bring guests
the
on.
Road to Dead Bird.
Like
yes,
every week. Right.
Yes. Well, I think we can all agree that I'm a genius. But my main argument has been that, yes, you raise a good point. I don't really know how to address it other than to say that, I'm open to all sponsors. but in the meantime, I am much more interested in you thankless bastards who had the actual hard part to do about, where the dragons come from. And so forth.
But that's really interesting though, because I think your struggle is going to be figuring out, now I know this world, but then what is my story that I'm setting in this world? Like, what's the tale that I tell in that? Or is it a really broad thing about this is what the world is like? But you still have to settle down into characters at some point and kind of figure that out. So where Caroline is talking about, I think I want to do something with the relationship between two girls in a boarding school. And she's got these sort of more story specific things, but she's not sure what the world around them is going to be like. You've got the world around you, but now you got to figure out, okay, what's my story set in this world, and that to me is going to be interesting. I think that's going to be your struggle coming up in the next.
I have everything more realistically specific, whereas the rest of you kind of have to go, hey, magic is real. What now?
Right.
Yeah.
So. Well, yeah, I mean, that was kind of so for mine, Kelly, unless you want to go first, you want to talk about yours? I had kind of complained to you guys last time. I was saying like, I have trouble with a fantasy world, which is what I drew, because I realized that while it's fun to create a world like that, I wasn't sure what kind of character I was going to do in that. Because immediately when I think of that, I think I used the example of a Robert Jordan novel that I was reading and how similar I felt it was to the sort of hero's journey tale that we see in a lot of stuff, and how it was like its own variation on Tolkien and this and that. And I felt like I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to have this young hero who is forced into this journey. I wanted to stay away from all that. So that's what I was sitting on. I'm like, okay, I could do one of these. I think Caroline figured out the term was portal worlds.
Yes.
That was appealing to me, which is, you know, someone going from our world into another world, the sort of Alice in Wonderland idea. I really wanted to do something like that for a while, but I didn't want to do that for this because I really wanted to challenge it. I wanted to push it. I wanted to be like, okay, if I'm going to sit down and make a Tolkien-like world, what would I do? And I was really kind of struggling because I was like, what, you know, I don't know. I don't know, like, why would it be? It's kind of like, Caroline, you were saying, it was kind of like, well, if I put elves in there, well, everybody's done elves, so what am I bringing to the table with elves? You know, what am I,
right.
Am I just, you know, doing a Tolkien world for the sake of it, and then what am I telling that's different? And so again, back to that example I said where, you know, when you're searching for something, you sort of cast out to things in your life. The thing that was happening to me is, okay, if I don't want to do a young person's story, you know, no surprise here. I just had a birthday. It was kind of one of those big milestone birthdays. I turned 40. And I did have that moment of panic of like that one has with these milestone birthdays where you think to yourself, oh, my God, what have I done with my life? You know, how much time do I have left? And so I started thinking about that. And I thought, okay, so what if it was about an older character? And I think at the time – I was watching stuff like I was watching the movie Prometheus, and there was that whole article where this guy was talking about all the symbolism and how it all tied to this and that. And one of the things he mentioned was that there was a, you know, point in history where the king was expected to die at a certain time to make way, you know, for the next king or to, you know, move things along, whatever it was. And I said, okay, what if that's my guy? It's sort of like I got to this point in my life. And now it's my birthday and I'm supposed to die, you know, I'm actually supposed to be killed. And, you know, and so I started to think about what that would mean, you know, like, okay, what if this guy is this warrior king and he's been fighting all his life and now suddenly on his birthday, on his 40th birthday or whatever age he would be, he's supposed to just, you know, die for his people. And I knowing that it was supposed to be a fantasy world separated from our own, I knew I couldn't do like a sort of Logan's Run, you know, your time is up thing. But I said, what happens if this guy doesn't die, chooses not to? And so I had to start thinking about the character in those terms, like, why would he choose not to die? And what are the ramifications of that? So that sort of launched me into this world. So I mean, first thing is, why would you have to die at 40? Okay, well, you know, since I'm dealing with a fantasy world, maybe there's some kind of dark god or something living in the mountain that demands it. And so there would be consequences if it doesn't happen. Or maybe it's so long ago that people don't know if it's true or not. It's sort of myth, but everyone's afraid to challenge that. Like, you know, well, we better because, you know, we've been raised on this story all our lives, you know. And so no one really knows, but no one wants to take a chance. And so I kind of had that in my head, and I wasn't really sure where to go with it. Then one of those sort of real life moments happens where I actually was sitting, I was driving south. I was helping my girlfriend's sister and brother-in-law move. And we're driving and we're talking about where she grew up, which is south, you know, close to the border. So it's kind of, you know, I always joke that she's from the desert, you know, and I grew up in sort of a foothills town in Northern California. And so we were talking about stuff, you know, the differences in our growing up. And I started thinking of like a modern literary short story that would start with a line like, you know, we talk about our differences, and then it would be dialogue, you know. And I thought, oh, that's kind of nice. But because I was working on this story, I said, okay, so it's not me. It's like an old king, and his sort of woman that's in bed with him is this, you know, girl from the south. And so now, and you know, of course, I'm sure Game of Thrones is seeping into my mind here, but I'm thinking about people from different lands, you know, and why they would be together. And so they're laying in bed together, and I said, oh, that's really interesting. They're talking about their differences, and all the time he's wondering, is she going to be the one that kills him? Because it's his birthday. And then
So like they like send an assassin to do it?
Well, that's what I'm kind of playing with that. Like, well, what if it was? Or but he's going like, will it be her or will it be his son? Because that's the way it's traditionally done.
Oh, wow.
I'm playing with all these ideas.
That's really cool.
And then I thought, well, okay. So, but what if she's actually the one that says, well, I need you to fight. I need you not to die. I need you to be alive. What if that is his reason for deciding not to die? And I kind of had this idea that this character, without really thinking about it, would sort of reflexively dodge all these attacks and sort of, without really thinking about what would happen to his people, he decides to live and then has to deal with the ramifications after sort of escaping his kingdom. And then I thought, well, where is he going? Well, what does she want from him? And at the so again, this is again all these things happening in my life. I'm sitting there on a weekend. I'm reading like I think a New Yorker article or something, and it's about drug cartels in Mexico. South desert, and it's about one in the east pushing towards the west and taking over. And I said, oh, her people are being taken over by a kingdom or clan or raiders of some kind that are coming east, coming to the west, you know, in this southern land, and she needs his help. She needs, because he has been such a warrior king in this northern land, she needs his help. And so he now has an opportunity to continue to fight, but it means leaving his people behind. And so I start just throwing all these things in a blender, and I'm thinking about all this, and then I start thinking about, okay, maybe this is even bigger than I thought. You know, Kelly will love this. Because then I start thinking, okay, so, well, if he leaves it behind, what happens? Well, maybe that dark god comes out. Or the son that didn't kill his father and his father left now has to deal with this. So he's like the prince who's never done anything in his life. He's like a poet or something. I don't know. I got to figure him out, and I got to figure out what he's going to do with the what he's going to do when this demon from on the mountain comes down, you know, because the sacrifice wasn't made, you know. So I'm starting to, it's this sort of waterfall of things going on, you know, figuring out. And all of a sudden I'm thinking it's a 3-book series. It's, you know.
Yay, I win.
Wow, that's really cool.
Yeah, and it's sort of just, and so, but then I had, at least I had a starting point. I had a character. And so I wrote up that first part where they're in bed together. And the struggle I'm having now is I have all these ideas and I think it's enough to move forward, but now I'm having trouble with the details of the world. So it's a kind of medieval-y world, but I haven't read fantasy for a while. I'm not as schooled in that era of history. I'm, you know, like we talked about with Game of Thrones, you know, I feel like George R. R. Martin is taking specifically from, you know, a certain period in time, but then like sort of twisting it to his own ends, right? And so I felt like, well, I don't know what things are called, or I don't know. So I'm struggling with the details. And I found myself playing at certain points with just making things up, like, why can't there be a tree that is just a kind of tree you can't find in the real world? And so that's the thing, is I'm wondering, am I using that as an excuse? Or am I just taking that idea that goes back to my surrealist painting idea, which is, you know, why not just shape the world to be what I want it to be and just change things as I want them and as I need them, you know? And I started thinking about, you know, because I started thinking about, he's not hunting wild boar in the mountains, but he's hunting some other creature, and I'll come up with something that's fearsome and, you know, worse than anything that's real, but, you know, has elements of all those things that are scary. You know, I started thinking about, what are the creatures in the desert, you know, snakes with scorpion tails, or what, you know, I don't know what, but it, like, why not start combining things and making my own creatures? And, you know, I haven't done anything with this yet, but these are the kinds of things that I'm sort of toying with in the back of my mind while now trying to start the narrative, because I need the characters to start talking to me so I know, you know, what I'm doing.
Well, see, as I mosey through the forest, all I can think is, what's so scary about this bush? Why am I afraid of this berry? And so on. Like, you can go, oh, because it's going to kill you.
Right, exactly.
as soon as you touch it. But I'm more like, well, I guess I'll just mosey on through this shrub.
That's actually so a great point. I can make everything dangerous.
Oh, I'm dead.
Yeah.
Hooray. I'm dead. But
short story.
What? Yeah, right. I'm the worst Faulkner character of all time. I'll just mosey on through. What is it? I'm dead. but you have better ideas than I, perhaps.
Just, not yet. That's pretty good.
I'll just do. That's the difference between you and me.
But that would be a great, like, Monty Python sketch, though.
it's
the world's deadliest bush.
It's very much in keeping with the way I live in my actual neighborhood, which is very close to the Mississippi River and full of snakes I know nothing about.
Yeah, that's what I started to think about is not just do I know the types of shrubbery and snakes and things like real details right. that I could
I
use.
It is red on black, friend of Jack, black on red, Jack's dead. Thing.
Wow.
Looks
but red on black is black on red.
But I
wait,
started...
is that a snake?
Yeah, it's the difference between like a cottonmouth and some garter snake that looks just like a cottonmouth. And it has something to do with like red on black, friend of Jack, white on red, Jack is dead or something. But the thing is, like, unless you know where the white and the black go, like it doesn't help you. And you'll be sitting there and the snake will bite you and you'll find out the hard way whether or not you've been bitten by a poisonous
snake. I'd be sitting there going, how does that go again?
Yeah. Right. I think my general rule would just be to avoid getting bit by snakes,
right?
Don't go outside.
Well, that's good.
It's red and black. Who gives a shit? I'm keeping away from it. That's my rhyme. Yeah, so I mean, but that's the thing. The other thing is also the time frame, like cultural references and stuff like that in terms of, you know, what kind of fabrics are these, you know, and do I care? But I mean, obviously I'm not going to have Velcro in there because that's going to cause some problems with my world, you know? So I'm kind of figuring out where I am in the timeline. Do I base it on something sort of what we've seen before, what people expect out of a medievalish fantasy world, or do I get completely bizarre with it and, you know, you could go anywhere. And so, you know, to Jim's point, it could be, yeah, I could just make stuff up and have the shrubs be dangerous in any way I want. But at the same time, I feel like if I had somebody like, you know, whip out his Velcro wallet, it would take everyone right out of it. If the next thing he's like, and then he, you know, sheathed his sword, you know, and, you know, you've got to still figure out what is the world, what are the incongruences that you want, what serves the story and what would take people out of the story. And so those are going to be my struggles.
Yeah, and I probably as we go on with these shows, but you can definitely talk about some of the practical aspects of like how you would do that. Like I was wondering if you would like you draft and you'd be like, okay, I'll write the name of a bush that I know, but I'll like highlight it or something, and then if I decide to change it to something else, you can like find and replace it at a later point or something like that.
Oh, and I made up a tree name right here in my. I can actually read you guys what I
yes,
wrote.
Yes, please.
I
mean, is that okay?
Yeah. We can do a show your work thing. It's really rough, but I'll read you guys what I wrote. It's just that beginning part that I talked about. And it's a little sexy time, so warning to our listeners. So this is what I wrote. The old king and the girl lay on a bed made of feathers and silk and fabrics the king cannot even name but caress his skin like a thousand kisses. The girl slips her long thin fingers in between the king's gnarled knuckles. They talk about their differences. She is from the desert, her skin the color of honey, her eyes the dark brown of the Kilcow trees the old king remembers climbing as a boy, their thick branches coiling upward toward the sun like a nest of vipers. Bah, says the king, it's too bloody hot. You've spent too long in the cold shadow of that awful mountain, says the girl. Better than barren rocks baking in the sun. At least the sun touches us. She runs her fingers along his pale flesh as he stretches his lean body. Her fingers trace the scars that cross his chest and arms, white puckered ridges of 100 steel bites. You've killed many men, she says. He thinks, will she be the one? Not so many, says the king, his fingers slipping around her wrists. He pulls her to him, noting that her own wounds at the hands of men are deeply hidden. If he discusses her, she shows no sign. Why do you fight? She asks. He kisses her neck, her shoulder, her bare left breast. The question catches him off guard. He raises his head, stares into her eyes, her inscrutable gaze. For all the usual reasons, he says with a grunt. For my people, for freedom, for life. He smiles, satisfying himself with his answer. Life, he thinks again, his eyes glancing to the window, bright afternoon sunlight beaming into the room. It could come from the window. He cranes his neck briefly, looking for the familiar glint of steel in mid-morning sun. She pulls his head back down to her breasts. He kisses each nipple. She twines her fingers through his graying hair, thinning at the top, if he's honest with himself, as a soft moan escapes her lips. He begins to feel his own arousal, and as if on cue, he feels her legs slip around his, locking at the back of his knee. She pivots, pushing him back, and she slides out from under him, and here it is, he thinks. She mounts him. He feels himself slip into her. It's not the penetration he was expecting, which makes the action somehow more erotic than usual. He groans. He has had many women in his bed, the king, as is his right. He's never liked the docile fawns. This woman, Aliana, as she calls herself, seems to take her pleasure, which emboldens his own lust. When it's over, he basks for the moment, the glow fading as the knot in his belly tightens again. He lets his awareness down. He reaches across, grabs her wrist, her hand hidden beneath the pillow. He expects the knife, but is surprised instead by what he finds. What? He looks at the object. Carved wood, twine, and tattered cloth. The loose shape shakes a memory, and he thinks of the word doll. What is... The king, never a great orator, trips over the unexpected flurry of thoughts. My sisters, says Aliana by way of explanation. How... asks the king. Even the questions seem beyond his grasp. Wait, says Aliana, her eyes wide and dark and brimming with soft tears. I need your help. I can't help anyone today, says the old king, relaxing his grip. He falls back into the down pillows. The doll is a message from my people. My sister, she has been taken. Do you understand what today is? He asks. You are my only hope, she says. Today is my birthday. Today is the day I die. There is silence between them. The old king sighs. Finally, he says, so you understand. She looks at him and slowly shakes her head, her hair falling in thick ringlets around her neck, across her shoulders. No, she says quietly, I need you to fight. To fight, he thinks, as he has his entire life, to fight for life, and today he is expected to die for his people. There is a knock at the door. The old king springs up at the sound, muscles coiling, hand already reaching for the sword at his bedside, a warrior's reflexes. To fight, he thinks, and smiles, shaking his head. It would be so easy. And that's as far as I got. So there you go. So that was my process of getting to that point.
So that was awesome.
Thank you.
I really like the world that you built a lot. I like the different cultures. You can tell, obviously, that you've had some influence from Game of Thrones, like you mentioned, but I think that's kind of relevant at this point. Like, you've already created two interesting characters that I want to know more about.
Right, right. And that was my feeling. I kind of thought, like, you know, I'm going to have these influences, and if I try to avoid all of them, I never can. It's something you said, actually, in the previous show. It's like, we're all sort of, you know, it's everything we've ever watched or experienced all ground up together, right? So I'm like, I can't avoid my influences, so why not just go with it and hope that the characters make the story different and make you want to read it. And I guess that was kind of where I was going with it.
Yay.
Well, I tried really hard not to fall into my old habits with this, because I know that it seems to me when I'm beating a different drum than everyone else, I'm all in the world and create the world and the characters second and who cares what story you have to tell. It's all about painting a picture. So I tried really hard to focus on characters, and it didn't work. So I had future world, and I spent a while kind of grousing and bling about the fact that I got the hard, boring one that I didn't want to do, but thank God it wasn't historical fiction or and having a big bird. But basically, I kind of, you know, my thought process was, again, I was, you know, grumbling at myself and was like, well, the only science fiction I read is Neal Stephenson, and I'm not going to even come close to emulating Neal Stephenson. And, you know, everything else I write is, or I read is, you know, like Margaret Atwood. And so it's all these like Handmaid's Tale women's issues. And I don't really want to write about women's issues because that's lame. And then I had this just sort of, I don't know, explosion, because I have all of these friends. Like, everyone I know is either pregnant or is struggling so hard to be pregnant, to be parents. And it's gut-wrenching. It's awful. You know, it's, we didn't, compared to what some of my friends are going through, like, we didn't hardly even struggle to have our first child, and our second child was a piece of cake. And it's just, it's hard to watch good people who want to be parents about struggle with it. So then this just kind of idea blossomed of a world where we've split into different genders is kind of the most awkward way to describe it, but that the family, instead of being two people who want to make babies, that the family units become three or four people with various sexual parts, but that some of us are just born sterile for some reason and some of us aren't. And so a family unit is made of all of those people. And they all have equal value within the family unit. And that's where I stalled, because I wanted to get to the people, but I didn't know how we got to that point in our history would affect who the people would be in the story, if that makes any sense at all.
Yeah, absolutely.
I kind of wanted it to be this sort of natural sort of genetic progression where it's like 500 years in the future, and it's how, you know, nature has handled the overpopulation problem that we have today. I thought maybe having some sort of event that just, you know, wiped out a certain amount, or, you know, some sort of virus got out that just made everyone stay like some massive polio or whatever. That felt like a traditionally like fantasy sort of setup. Because, I mean, I believe that there's no difference. It's just vocabulary, but everyone else disagrees with me. So it seems like, well, I'll just invent a disease that, you know, turns a third of the population into a third gender, and then we're good to go. That felt cheating. So I kind of, after this big giant explosion, it was all I could think about for about 48 hours. I wanted to put it aside, but I didn't want to get too far ahead. Wishing, after hearing Dave's story, that I'd worked with it a little bit more. But I definitely know that the first thing I need to figure out is how we get there. And I don't want it to be a story where, and I guess this is probably, I don't want it to be conflict in it, because I don't want it to be where somebody wakes up and decides this is wrong, or somebody wakes up, somebody who is this sort of third or possibly fourth gender, can't figure out whether it's like a donkey mute thing where just this like genderless person, but I don't know. I haven't figured it out yet, obviously. But I don't want there to be conflict. I don't want someone to decide that this is wrong, or someone to be unhappy that they're the one who is breeding, or they're the one who's not breeding. I want it to be this world where we're all cool with it, which I think probably says a lot about how I feel about current political values, which I didn't think I had any thoughts about. And then I started thinking about this, and I'm like, I think I have strong feelings about this.
I think... For something like that, I think it is a good idea to have your world and your sort of structure set up pretty well when you start. And then you can sort of be like, okay, well, what kind of, if you just tell, you could tell if like whatever would be a fairly normal family story within our context. And then how is that changed by having this different family structure? I think there's a whole lot you could do with that. So in other words, right. I mean the conflict wouldn't have to be that somebody thinks the system is a bad idea. You know, the conflict would just be, okay, maybe this is just like, you know, how do you deal with the kid getting a driver's license when they have three parents or whatever? Something, you know, I mean, that's silly, but that's just kind of like, and if you figure out like how does that everyday stuff go, then you
could just like a random coming of age story. Happens to be mm-hmm. coming of age where you've got, you know, three sisters and two moms and four dads, mm-hmm. and everyone's totally cool with that. I don't know. That's all the further I got.
That's cool though.
Yeah, I get what you're saying about where it would be difficult as a story, because you want some kind of conflict in there. And is it just that the setting is just the background that somehow informs, and it's a normal conflict, like you said, like a coming of age story, or is it more of a conflict with the society and this change, you know? And then it makes me think of, you know, an analogy would be something like, big love, you know, or something like some like a Mormon, like sister wives idea or something like that, where a non-traditional family structure, well, of any kind, but that's just what popped to my mind when you said that. You know, maybe the, you know, the debate that would go on in that society. So it's kind of a way of like digging into that idea. But that's really fascinating. I think that's great. And I like the way, you know, your own personal feelings about the world now sort of translate into, well, what if it was like this, you know, down the line, and trying to figure out what you would do with that. So have you figured out like a character? Have you started to figure out any of the characters or like what they would do or what they'd be like?
A little bit. I kind of like the idea of somebody working like a matchmaking sort of profession, because like if have this sort of,
that's awesome.
Okay, so we like that idea.
Yes.
Yeah, I just, if you have this world, you have to pair up three or possibly four people. And I don't, it's not to say that I don't want there to be divorce in this world, but I don't want it to be sort of happenstance. We'll try this for a little while and then walk away. Like, I want this to be, you know, groups that are together for 40, 50 years, like we are fortunate enough to have in our world now. I don't want it to be a temporary thing. But you, like, to just finding three other people that you can get along with well enough to spend 6 years with and raise children with is, like, it's hard enough to find one person to do that with.
So I think
the matchmaker is interesting.
When you said that, I, like, sort of gasped a little bit. I was like, oh, that's perfect. You know, and it's got that analogy with the present day. I mean, you know, you look at the way the internet has changed dating, you know, and dating sites and this matching. And, you know, it'd be really interesting to have somebody that's dealing with that and, like, matching, like, you know, three people or four people together, or, you know, whatever the kind of structure is. It'd be really interesting. I think that's a great character to follow. I'd be very curious to see what their life is like and what kind of conflict they would come into. I mean, you could write a whole short story about the matchmaker who makes a mistake and then goes around trying to cover it up or to fix it the whole time. And all of the story plot could come from that.
I wonder, like, within that society, what does, like, a love story look like? What does a romance novel or a fairy tale look like that you would, you know, that someone who is growing up in that society and sort of preparing to, you know, to sort of create their own family unit, they're not going to have the same kind of, like, the most of the romance novels or whatever we have today sort of assume people are looking to get married to get one partner. And so I think it would be really interesting to think about, you know, that sort of popular mythology within that world. And that probably is going to affect, if you have a matchmaker, that's how she's going to, you know, she's going to want to appeal to clients. So she's going to sort of have to buy into whatever their myths are about love, you know, or, you know, romance or whatever they think that a relationship is based on.
Well, and that's the thing, too, that I would figure out. Like, so say there are three or possibly four gender, first figure out whether there's three or four. But, like, do you know from birth? Does it happen at puberty? Is it something that you get tested for? Like, how – if there are just simply three genders, and when you are born, you are obviously one of these three genders, like, that's very different than nobody knows what you are until puberty.
Yeah, that's, you know, also right, an interesting thing to work with, yeah. So it's like you basically start out with everybody's the same, and then you sort of wait to see what's going to happen.
Right, or two morph into three or four or whatever. And then there's an issue of, like, so is it cool if, like, four breeding people get together, or is that not allowed because that ruins the whole point of having this third gen, you know, like, with what if that's taboo suddenly, that, like, you're allowed to love two people, but one of them has to be sterile. Like, I just don't know.
Yeah, you have a lot that you can go with. I mean, just you could follow the story of that third gender and see, like, what are the trials and tribulations that person faces, you know, in a world, you know, if they're a little bit different than, not a little bit different because they all fit together in that way, but, you know, like, it creates a unique role. I mean, I'm thinking of other cultures where transgender people or you know, gay people, any, you know, have had a special role in society.
Right.
Cultures where they've had, like, an elevated role or, like, a shamanic type of role. I mean, that's kind of fascinating. You could sort of follow that. It's also making me think of, what is the name of that novel? I'm going to blink on it now. Jeffrey, what is his name? Eugenides. I'm going to forget it.
Eugenides Middlesex?
Yes. Middlesex, yes. Did you read that?
No, not yet.
Which is a great, I mean, it's a great novel. I really liked it. But it is about, you know, somebody who is a hermaphrodite and who spends part of their life one way and then switches at a certain point in their life to live life as another gender. And so it's that very unique thing. So when, at the moment you said, like, you know, what if you don't know till puberty, that reminded me a lot of that book. I mean, I think that you could express that kind of feeling of coming out and changing that sort of chrysalis idea of, like, you know, what if you, you know, are going through this metamorphosis into something else at a certain point. How does that change your whole life? I mean, that's a great life story right there. There's a lot you can do. I think you're gonna have the same problem as Caroline, which is narrowing down what your story is in that world. You know, once you, or maybe Jim, it's what you narrow down in that world now that you have the world thought up.
I am. The other issue I'm struggling with right now is, and this may be one of the reasons why I personally, I stick to fantasy. I'm not sure I have a right to tell the story. Again, I'm happily cisgendered with my husband and my two kids that, you know, grew up adults. And it's like, I'm taking on issues that affect me because they affect my friends. They don't really affect me. And I accurately represent some of these issues? Do I have any right to explore these issues when there's debate and ownership in our current society over some of this stuff?
Right, right. Like, can
not
I
that I
justice?
Expect you guys to be able to tell me, but like,
right, right.
Yeah, I would say you'd probably have to. Sorry.
It's just one of the things, like, I don't have that problem with vampires. Like, I don't need to go ask Anne Rice whether or not it's okay for me to write about vampires. Like, Bram Stoker died centuries ago. Like, it's cool and it's safe and it's allowed to be, you know, whatever it is. But I feel like if this turns into something real, like, you know, people start looking at my life and are like, well, what the hell does she know?
Yeah, I mean, so I totally get that, and I get that. I think it's something that we all face as writers as we, you know, try to write a life experience that's not our own, and we can do a lot of research, and we can do a lot of observation and having friends and everything. I've thought about it in terms of, like, can I write an African-American character and really kind of, you know, effectively get behind that experience, and even though it's not my own, you know, how much research, how many friends do I have to talk to, you know, what do I have to look at to really make it effective? And it's easy when you are going that fantasy route or something that doesn't exist. If it was robots or something, you can make up your own rules for it, and that goes back to that whole surrealist idea, which is don't use reality because, you know, because you can get at the feelings by just, you know, and make and imagine whatever, you know. So you kind of get a little bit of a pass if you're making different genders up, because you can say, well, nobody's this because I made it up, you know. But to your point, I think you want to stick to, there are a lot of people out there that have experiences with, you know, gender identity and different things like that in our culture. And so, you know, I think, but I kind of always feel like we can be scared off by doing that. But if we do our job as writers, the goal is to, you know, do a bit of research, you know, whether it's talking to friends or sharing experiences with friends, but then also turn that inward and figure out, how do I connect to that? Because we all have, you know, feelings that we can all relate to, of either whether it's abandonment or, I don't know, whatever the issues are that we're feeling. We've all had it, you know, embarrassment, you know, any feeling. I mean, there's sort of a universal point, and the trick is to figure out the details and to kind of get into that mindset and then let yourself go with it. But that is a tough one.
Yeah, I guess my perspective on that is, and I don't know exactly, from listening to you talk, how you're talking about approaching the story. And again, I'm not in any position to, you know, be affected by this. But, like, I mean, if you're concerned about it, I'm sure there's places you can look on the internet and, you know, sort of read stuff about, well, I mean, you know, or, you know, read something you're reading about, if you read something about trans issues, if you're thinking that is going to affect what's in the story, sort of see and sort of, you know, read enough to like get yourself sort of an in and a starting point if there's people you have conversations with or whatever. And then, you know, sort of see if you have a story. And if you write enough to the point you're like, okay, I have this story, I think there may be some issues with it. You know, I mean, there are ways to find an audience that, you know, that either sort of fits in that category or has some experience with writing and talking about it that would be able to sort of point you to some resources. So, I guess I know that, you know, like based on like having been to stuff like WizCon, there are people who want to, who sort of in the writing community who want to talk about, you know, how writers can represent trans people, for instance, better. Right. So there's people who want to have that conversation. Yeah. So I think if you, you know, if you get to the point where you're not just playing around with it, where it's like, okay, this is really a story that I might want to, you know, that I might have some legs and that I want to go out there with, I think you can find those resources. And, you know, and I think it's, you know, I mean, I don't have a lot of experience with this myself, but I think that you know, don't necessarily let it stifle you starting out. But then also don't start from a, if you feel like you're starting from a place of complete ignorance, I think you, which I'm not saying that you do, but I'm just like sort of you, general you, then, you know, definitely do some of that background research, read something that's from the point of view of, you know, whether it's the race or the gender or whatever that you want to write about. And to, you know, sort of, so you're not just completely inventing, oh, this is what I think it would be like. And then you read like 20 people say something completely different, you're like, well, maybe I'm sort of talking out of my ass because I really don't have anything to say about this. But, you know, I mean, you're never going to be able to find, I think, the experience that speaks for everyone. Mm-hmm. And just to go back to, there are people who are interested in talking about these issues and are interested in having them represented well. So, totally. You know, if you get to that point with the story, you be aware of it's that issue and sort of see, you know, and it may be that there will be a point with you'll write something that you think is, you know, awesome, and you know, you show it to somebody and they're like, there's just no way this is going to work because of this, and it right. might be because of this like cultural thing that you're completely not aware of,
right?
And then you sort of, well, how do I fix it, or do I go back to the drawing board or whatever? But probably, you know, you'll get some suggestions of how to, you know, what you can add to it or how you can change it to get to.
I kind of feel like if the framework is there, then mm-hmm. you'll find that it's not as foreign as you think it is. Because if you kind of like set up, and this is just sort of a, you know, thought game for myself, if you just sort of set yourself into that world and say, okay, so the world is like this for me now, whether it's, you know, I have to go to use a different restroom than other people or something like that, you know, you can, if you really...
Oh, I didn't even think about that. Sorry.
you can really start to think about how would that change, how would I feel about that? And if you really give yourself over to your imagination and try and think, you know, how would that affect my life? And yes, it does. Definitely, there are, you know, as Caroline said, there are people that can, that are certainly willing to talk to, and we probably have friends of friends, and you know, they're, you know, people that you can talk to about whose experience is different in life than yours. I mean, you were even saying about friends that were frustrated, you know, having children. That's a real feeling, and listening to them, you get that sense, and maybe you don't have that same frustration, but you know what frustration is, and you know what that. So then, when you set up the framework of your world, then you're like, okay, there's a frustration there. This is how it's going to come out in people, and you're going to know it because there is a part that's universal, and that's that sense of frustration. You can tap that, and I think that will be authentic. But then, like Caroline said, you know, there may be some details that need to be hammered out, you know. And so I think it's just this weird balancing act of maybe some, it's going to involve some research or talking to people to get started, or maybe it will be some in the details afterwards, but don't let it stifle you. I totally agree. I think that, like, start playing in the world, set yourself into that world in one of these roles, and then figure out what the issues would be and how it would make you feel, and then you might find, hey, that's kind of like, I remember reading a story about a, you know, transgender person who dealt with something. Where is that story? And then, you know, you realize there's a connection there, and, you know, I think that that's one of the tricks. Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, I think that you can figure it out as you go, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, and like, at the risk of stating something really obvious, you don't want to be like, hey, you're my Baron friend. Why don't you talk to me about this? But like, you know, and you know, and there's certainly, you know, just for example, there are going to be people who like, you know what? I don't want to have the conversation about how you should write transgender people because I don't feel like that's my job. Mm-hmm. You know, there. So you sort of want to find a person who wants to have that conversation. But then I think also maybe the way to go is when you talk about like people struggling to have children, that's not something I have like, you know, even really close hand experience with, but it's something that's really highly represented in media and really highly represented in films and books and stuff like that. So I think the approach for something like that might be, you know, if you're having a conversation with somebody, say, okay, I have seen 20,000 movies about people, you know, trying to get pregnant. When you watch these, is there something in these movies that they always get wrong that drives you nuts, right? So that, yeah. In other words, right, like what are some cliches about this that are out there that you just think are totally inappropriate or just that are so common that you would like to see them taken from another direction?
Ooh,
like,
that's good.
Is it all if in the story it's always the woman who really wants the kid and the man is really indifferent, like, well, maybe you want to write a story where it kind of goes the other way around. Or obviously, you know, if you're talking about, you know, once you've got this sort of three gender structure in there, then, well, what would the expectations be about who's going to be the caretaker and who's going to have what emotional connection to what's going on? And so I'm using a lot of abstract examples, but even something might not even be a bad representation of this, but if it's the same representation every single time it turns up in media, maybe people want to see something different. And yeah, the people who have a closer experience of that probably have thought about this and probably have some ideas about it.
That's a great conversation, you know, topic. I mean, I think because that's approaching it from a very positive way, but also a very creative way, because you're kind of getting someone else to think about, oh, you know what's never represented, and then you know it's kind of giving you material. but it is also looking at it from an angle that's not done. So I think that's a really clever approach if you're just talking about this kind of stuff with friends or people that you are looking for as sort of, I don't want to say research subjects, but you know what I mean, like
I mean? and if you're thinking about it that way, you probably do want to tell them, like, right, you know, I'm writing a story about this, yeah, you know, yeah, blah, 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 rather than them like finding out after you've written the story. Cause that's another cliche thing that happens.
Wow, she was so thoughtful and interested in everything I had to say that day. Now she has a Pulitzer Prize.
Yeah,
bitch.
anyway.
So I think that actually transitions nicely to the end of our podcast, unless we have anything more to say.
No, I think that's it.
Because what we want to do from this point on, now that we've all shared our horror stories and our trials about just getting to that first idea at the beginning of this process, the next few podcasts, we want to take a look at some of the more detailed things that you have to do when you're building a world, and to really kind of focus in and hone in on a specific thing. We recognize that that everything sort of happens, not necessarily all at once, but you can't just say, okay, today I'm going to work on the culture, or today I'm going to work on fancy names for trees. But you do have certain areas that you focus on when you do these things. So next month, we are going to focus on history, the things that happened basically before the story starts. So, you know, in Jim's case, this will be after Big Bird blows up, but between that and whenever the characters get going, for me, I have to figure out how they got where they are. So that should be a really interesting show.
All right, excellent.
Yeah, I think this is going to be good. Looking at the list of topics that we came up with coming down the pike, I mean, you can tell that each of us is going to have a different struggle and a different level of importance almost with all of these different topics. I mean, I'm definitely, I don't know what the heck I'm going to do with names when we get down to that point, but you know, history, obviously I've already been talking about it with you guys, and just in that little bit I had to write, and I still have to figure out some things. So, you know, what happened before that story began, I need to know some things as I move along. So I think this is going to be a good topic, and we're all going to be hitting it in different ways, like we did with this show. And hopefully our listeners are, and especially those playing along at home, are, you know, can relate to some of these experiences, because I think it's really interesting the way we've all approached it in slightly different ways, but there's some definite commonalities with all of our stuff. Or at least our struggles.
Yes, right. Yes. Not our stuff.
Yeah.
No, there is really not very much overlap at all in the topics we're talking about, which is interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, well, I mean, not yet. I'm sure, like, commonalities will emerge. But we really all, you know, just even apart from the type of prompt we had, went kind of took it in a totally different direction.
Yeah, I think, like, you know, Jim coming up with the sort of background world and Kelly coming up with this sort of future speculative world, they're both kind of came up with the world and they're figuring out, what are my characters going to do in that mm-hmm. world? And that's going to be the next step for them. So I see that. Where you, I think, on the flip, or the, almost the flip side of that, where you're like, well, I don't know. I could do all these different things. I don't know. But I kind of want to write about these two girls, you know, and now you're figuring out, well, what world do I pick to set it in, you know? So, and I think I kind of came from it more from your way too, which is, you know, oh, well, I have to do a fantasy world. So what do I want to write about? What are the characters? And then it started assembling itself from there. So,
but, by the way, I already want to do world building in your world, Dave, so much more than I want to do mine.
We should do
I'm like, I want, what does the succession clause look like? So anyway, I don't know.
We, we can do a world swap.
History nerd, sorry.
You know, you can do that in your world too.
Oh, I know. I'm just not there yet.
Okay.
All right. So should we talk about where people can find us and all that good stuff?
Yes, yes.
All right. So our website is thedeceptionist.org. Caroline, what's our Twitter account?
At deceptionist, no, the.
And Jim, can they reach us via email? Apparently they can't. Jim is on mute again.
Oh, dear.
This is so, yes, they can reach us by email at contact@thedeceptionist.org. We do read that, I promise. We're a little lax about responding to them because we is me, but we do get them. So we appreciate all of the feedback that we get through email.
And then we can also be found on Facebook. We have a Facebook page, so like us there. And leave us iTunes reviews, because those are really cool, and we like to hear what you guys have to say. And as always, you can find any of us on Twitter, and you can talk to us about the prompts at Deceptionist, like we said, but also maybe as a way of signing off, we should give our individual Twitter handles, and if Jim's not on the line still, we can just say his at the end. So I'm DaCampo, DaCCampo.
Annaluna, AnnaLuna.
Mad Marvel Girl. I'm not going to spell that.
And Jim is...
Jim left the building already to go work on his Big Bird story. Clearly. Clearly.
Sounds about right.
All right. Well, I think that wraps up the show. So we'll be back in a month, and we are talking about history, right? That's what we said.
Yes.
History. So history on the
history
next show.
Of our world.
And again, if you want to play along, you can still join us. You can still have us generate a theme or a prompt for you, or you can just pick one of our prompts. We had a fantasy world, a world where something supernatural or different is going on, but it's still our world, an alternate history world, and a world set at some point in the future, a speculative future world. So any of those you can pick from, or we'll randomly generate one for you, and you can start building, and then let us know how you're coming along. Because I'd really like to hear from anyone playing at home, like, what if you guys have had similar experiences to us, or different experiences. I think that would be really interesting to hear. So, anyone got anything else, or is that it?
I think we're good.
Alright, cool. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
They make the laws to chain us well. The clergy dazzle us with heaven, or they damn us into hell. We will not worship the God they serve, the God of greed who feeds the rich while poor men starve. We work, we eat together, we need
no swords. We will not bow to the masters.
Okay, Jim's phone is yellow on this, and it says away 20 minutes ago.
Oh, no. Did we really lose
that might just be the
ago?
Last time he refreshed something on the phone or something like that. I don't know if that means that was the last time he was on. But, I don't know.